You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Empire.
Hello and welcome to my podcast. Today, I'm joined by Michael Phillips from the Richmond Times-Dispatch as we discuss the news of when the new name will be announced. It's February 2nd. We spent only a few minutes on that because how much can you really go over it, but we did have some discussion about it before we then dissected Ron Rivera's comments from Monday, some of which were revealing about the direction of the team and Chase Young's development. Some good insight for you. Also, for what it's worth, we did not discuss the name Admirals, which became an internet rumor this morning or maybe later in the morning. However, I'll be honest, I kind of like that name, so we'll see. Stay tuned for February 2nd. You can follow Michael on Twitter at MichaelPRTD, and you can read my work on ESPN.com. You can follow me on Instagram as well at John Keim ESPN. Before I share my conversation, I wanted to share some of what I learned after watching the game against from Sunday. Now, I haven't watched the entire game at this point, but I watched some specific plays. I wanted to watch Cole Holcomb and the impact that having another play caller next to him and David Mayo made on him. So I'm going to focus on that position for a minute. And it's something I'll get into later podcasts this offseason as we dig into various topics on this team. But it's important to note the impact Mayo made in the game Sunday. Now, I don't mean that he played at some Pro Bowl level, but to me, it indicated why it's so important to get a strong vet in here to play the middle. Mayo is limited, but he's a solid backup and he knows the position. When Carolina drafted him, I remember Rivera had said this before talking about him, but it was to be a backup to Luke Kuechly, not because he's at that level, but because he can play a similar way, just not to the same level. What stood out to me was how decisive Mayo was. And that's not a word consistently used to describe Cole Holcomb or Jamin Davis when they would play in the middle. And Holcomb, of course, has played there a lot more. Check out the goal line D in the third quarter on the drive in which the Eagles scored their second touchdown where Hurts got tripped, but he made the pitch and they got the touchdown. Mayo impacted the first three plays in that series. On the first one, you see him before the snap, point to Bobby McCain pre-snap to warn him about a block coming from the receiver. On that, because of that, McCain was able to get up and get into the hole. Now, he didn't need to be there because Mayo crashes hard inside and helps make the stop. I mean, McCain had to be there, but he was able to get there. He didn't have to make the stop, but he was in the right spot and wasn't affected by the potential block because of Mayo's direction. On second down, Mayo shoots inside and quickly breaks up a double team, but leaves Holcomb free to make the stop in the hole. And on third down, you see Mayo directing the outside to his right as to what to do or what's coming. In fact, the Eagles ran the ball that way. After he points, you see him turn and decisively hit the hole as the ball is snapped. Again, Holcomb was free to get to the ball. So Holcomb runs down the side, makes a stop, but also Mayo clears up the double team. He gets double teams off of the defensive lineman much quicker than Holcomb has this season. Holcomb could play uncluttered because you had someone else calling the signals. Now, the Eagles scored on fourth down because they quick snapped it. And to be honest, I felt Washington should have called a timeout because apparently they knew what was coming. They were told what was coming. They just weren't in the right position because of the quick snap. And because of that, the Eagles scored. But those first three plays told me how it can look with a strong veteran presence inside and with Holcomb to free to play uncluttered. Too often when he's in the play calling role, he hesitates. And even though he got better with that at times this year, you still saw it Sunday when it was he in charge out there, when he was the only linebacker or when he was next to Davis, then you could still see some of that hesitation. And that's why I think that is a definite priority for Washington this off season. And like I said, I'll get into more of that in some of the play calling stuff later in other podcasts, but let's move on. Another guy that I like is guard Sadiq Charles. Now, I told you last offseason that his best spot was guard, and that's where he'd play. It's what I had heard from a few people who know him well. And but clearly they worked him at tackle too. So there you go. But I'll tell you this again, after seeing him this season, I'd be surprised if he's going to start. It's definitely as a guard, or at most he's a backup tackle with primary, he's a swing guy like he was this year, but they really like that. I will say, tell you this, they like him a lot more at guard after having watched him play. Besides, they have Sam Cosmi at right tackle. They want to re-sign Charles Leno. There's already been contact made about that. So Sadiq Charles wouldn't start at tackle, but he could be a backup there. However, he's shown more physicality inside when playing guard. What he must learn to do is keep his feet moving, but he plays tough inside, and that's where he'll help the most. They do believe that now. Now, when I said, when you watch him in pass protection, when he got beat one time on Sunday, wasn't because he got stoned and driven back. It's because he had this guy and he didn't continue to use his feet. A little bit lazy, I would say, with his feet. Clean that up, and I think you have a guy who can help them inside. Anyway, this episode with Michael ran a touch longer, so that's it from me. After this break, I'll be back with Michael Phillips of the Richmond Times-Dispatch as we discuss possible new names, plus dig deep into some of Ron Rivera's comments from Monday, some telling ones that involve Chase Young. Welcome back. Now here's my conversation with Michael Phillips of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. I am back with America's podcast guest, Michael Phillips. Michael, originally I was going to have you on to talk about some of what Ron Rivera said on Monday because I thought some of those quotes were interesting. And then we found out today that when the date of the new name will be announced, which is February 2nd, and we know some of the possibilities. I mean, according to Tanya Snyder on the Schefter podcast, she confirmed those 8 that came out. I'm curious, like, first of all,
we can take it down to 7 now, right?
We can take it down to 7 because, yes, yep. I was going to say Red Wolves was on that list and Jason Wright came out and said no dice because of trademark issues. So that was a fan favorite. That is out. So looking at this list, it's Armada, Brigade, Red Hawks, Commanders, Defenders, or Football Team. Do you have a favorite in that group?
I think we can toss Football Team too, right?
We can toss Football Team. Yeah. I mean, listen,
it's
technically on the list, but yeah, I mean, it's not going to be that.
It's not Football Team. Do I have a favorite? I don't know if I have a favorite. Maybe Armada. I don't know. I think Armada's got a lot of cool visual stuff you can do with it. The problem being, like, with all due respect to the Potomac, you're not on the water. Like, you know, it's right. You know, not really a seafaring place. You know, no disrespect to the mighty Potomac, of course. You know, but like the stadium, unless it's the RFK site, which I think we agree isn't going to happen. Like the stadium's not going to be on a body of water.
Right.
You know, we all hear the same rumors, you know, of course, of Commanders. I think whatever it is will grow on people eventually. I don't think there's a full on like dud that will ultimately be rejected. But I think, you know, you look at what the Wizards did, you know, from the Bullets, and there's certainly still a segment of that fan base that will forever view them as the Bullets. And I think they'll forever be the Redskins for a certain, you know, age and demographic of fan around here. I don't think that'll ever change. But, you know, it's all about how cool the stuff looks. I mean, you think about college football, man, you know, like you either have an iconic uniform, you know, you've got an Alabama or an Ohio State or a Michigan or like it's iconic, or you better be fresh and cool every week. You know, and so they're not iconic anymore. So they better be fresh and cool when they bring it.
Well, and that's what I'm sure you've had some of these same conversations. To me, the biggest key will be the logo. And probably more so the name, because I think people are going to gravitate to the logo as much as they will the name, because the logo is what's going to sell gear for them. And I think it's going to be what attracts people. So whatever the name is, I think the logo will be maybe a bigger part of it. Do you think?
Oh, yeah. You think about the merchandising and all that. So, you know, if you think about, you know, big cities, like the baseball hat, you know, has to be classic and iconic, you know, like the curly W I think is a great look for the Nationals and a great look for the city. It represents DC and what it is, you know, New York Yankees, of course, you know, Cleveland with the block C, Kansas City has the KC. Like there's a classic element to baseball teams. Football is not constrained by those boundaries. You can be a little bit edgier. You can be a little bit cooler and more progressive with a football logo, I think, you know, than you can in other places. And not to say they need to be like outlandish with how they do it, but they're committed to the burgundy and gold. So, you know, you're drawn inside some lines to begin with. But yeah, I don't know. I just think like there's so much opportunity here to put some cool stuff in the space. Cause I'm just going to say it. I thought all the football team merchandise was really lame. Like, I don't know that that's anybody's fault, obviously, because it was a quick rollout and you didn't want to invest a lot of energy in that. But like, you know, I want to wear something cool. Like, I want to rock something that the people that I'll be proud of wearing. And I think there's a big opportunity to do that here.
Well, yeah. And I think that's why it won't be football team, because there isn't a chance to develop anything snazzy and cool off that. And, you know, I'm pretty sure they think it's boring. So, but that's
pretty sure it is boring.
Yeah. Well, it is, but I think they know that. I think there was an element of fans who wanted to see it continue because they got used to it. But I don't think you can market football team quite the way, same way you could Commanders. And again, it's the logo that will be a big key in all of this. And that's, you know, whether it's again, Commanders or, you know, I kind of like Red Hawks, but I don't think my gut would say if the whole reason with the Wolves, Red Wolves, is the trademark issue with Wolves. I would think that Hawks would have the same issue.
No question.
Yeah.
Can I hit you with a question? Who's the greatest player in football team history?
John Allen.
Allen, Terry. Look, I mean,
Terry, what Terry? Yeah. Okay.
You got to throw Heineke's name in there. Cause I mean the Tampa game does count. It's not Alex Smith. He didn't play enough, but
I think Alex Smith had
the biggest heater in Washington football team history.
There you go. But I think I could go with Terry. That's a good podcast. It's a good podcast. 5 minute quick bonus podcast debate.
That's a good mid-May podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. The greatest. Yeah. Now that they've changed their name from football team, who was the, you know, top five greatest moments in football team history?
We're going to make it to five.
Let's see. Top five. Let's see. I guess beating Nate Sudfeld to clinch the division.
Almost beating Tom Brady is legit a top five moment in football team history.
I think the dive for the pylon.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that would be one. Beating the Bucks here.
How about Terry's catch in week one against the Chargers on the sideline?
Like, oh, yeah. Yeah.
That one was
well, great. I think his catch, the catch against the Bucks would be a huge
That's a
one.
Good one. Yeah. That's a good one, too. So, yeah.
There you go. Now we did it. And then there was that Tress Way punt that was really good.
You were all the way down the rabbit hole. But yeah, it's, you know, I don't think any of these names particular to me stand out. I think it's all in the branding and how cool you make it. Right. Like, look, this is where Jason Wright makes his money, man. Like, he is a businessman. He has worked at consulting firms. Like, what is this if not the ultimate consulting and rebranding project right here that millions of people are going to see?
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is the fact that they announce this a month in advance. Some other things that have happened here, they did not announce a month in advance. And I wonder if that was a lesson learned. And because here's the other thing. We know that there are potential congressional hearings coming up, possibly. And you want to get ahead of that by saying, we're not doing this as a reaction to that. We're not announcing the name now because Congress is doing this. It's get ahead of it and be proactive with it. And I think, and I just wonder if some of that is not due to the Sean Taylor fiasco.
No doubt. And so there's always going to be the like, oh, they just announced it because like, oh, they just announced Sean Taylor because of the emails. Right. Oh, they just announced the name because the railing fell. But like, let's call this what it is. There's always something bad happening.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. By that criteria, they could never announce anything.
You can't wait until it's a quiet space because you might never have an identity.
They just announced it because Curtis Sam is on the side field again. You know, and if it's the Washington side fields, we're all in trouble.
Smoke machine.
Yeah, the smoke machine. Yes, yeah, they're very good. But I do think some of that is related to that. And so, you know, and you what you have to hope if you're a fan, because Jason Wright will be gone from here at some point. This is not, you know, I mean, we all, you know, whether it's next year, 10 years, whenever, fans have to live with this one. So that's why it's important for them to get this right. And it's not just, it can't be a hit and run moment for them. Like this new group comes in, does this and leaves, because everybody else has to live with it for years. Like the Wizards. People still don't like that name, but
you know, look, I take a lot of swings at Dan Snyder. I think a lot of them are justified, but one thing that we have to say in all honesty, he legitimately deeply passionately cares about the history, the franchise itself, like the identity. He's not going to let a dud slip through the cracks here, I don't think.
You wouldn't think.
Like this is a thing that matters on a very personal level to him. Yes. How this plays out.
And I think that's a very good point. That is one thing that people can bank on, that the guy, you know, we all know about the belt buckle in the 70s and all that, but he truly grew up in this area as a Redskins fan. So he did not want to change the name. So I think whatever it's going to go to, it's going to have to be something that, again, this is the rebranding. This is the first part, because then the next part is going to be the stadium. So they need to build some momentum, but you have to get this right, because, and I'll say this as somebody who grew up in Cleveland with the Indians changing their name. As soon as it's announced, you're probably not going to like it, because that's now the permanent name. It's like, really? And maybe there's going to be a segment that will like it. And maybe at best you can hope for is probably 50-50. But that's why I say the logo has to then pull you in and be something you can identify with. And then I'll also be curious, like, what are these traditions they want to build off of this? And, you know, you heard some music being played the other day with it. I don't know if it was an attempted a new song or something like that after one of the touchdowns, but I don't know if you caught that. There was, you know, but
yeah, and you know, I to bring it back, you had mentioned Rivera's comments the other day off the top. I think it comes at a really good time football wise in the sense of, you know, Rivera's already leaning into high expectations for next year's group, which you don't always hear from a coach, and certainly did not hear that from him this year. You heard that from the players this offseason, that, you know, the defense was running their mouth all offseason, which we've reminded people of. But
in fairness to the defense, a lot of other people were running it for them too. A lot of us in the media. So it wasn't just them, but they went above and beyond with the record-breaking sack totals. So go on.
No doubt. But Rivera's already leaning into high expectations next year. I don't think that's unfair. I think we've seen a lot of building block pieces. And, you know, depending on which way the quarterback thing shakes out this year, I think it's not unfair to think that this could be, you know, the year where they kind of push through and get above 500 with them.
And that's so let's go into that, because I don't know what much more we can say about a possible name, because we don't know what it is.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I wanted to get into some of his comments from Monday, because it really felt like we still have one more season-ending press conference after the day after the Giants game. But this is how it felt. Like, this was a, you know, looking ahead, and, you know, I don't think we know they're going to go after a quarterback, so we don't need to talk about Kyle Allen and Taylor Heinicke, who's going to start, what it means. I think the interesting thing was, here's one of the things you said about the third year. Asked about expectations, should they be high? And he said, if you map things out, you plan things out, this is really what we believe. I don't see why not. I know expectations will be high. I know people will say, well, it's your third season. This is what happens in the third season. I get it. At the end of the day, we have some holes we want to fill, have some players we want to make sure they are the right kind of guys that are going to be out on the field. Believe me, I didn't come here thinking that it's going to be an easy turnaround. And that's kind of what we were just talking about with the third year. And you think that, I mean, he seems to be embracing, because then, and one of the other things he talked about too, was in Carolina, his third season was really good. And the first 2 years were very much like these last two. The difference is they had Cam Newton. So
we'll never know how different this year would have been with Fitzpatrick, but with all due respect to him, I'm going to play the hunch that it's not a playoff year.
Not with all the other stuff that's happened.
Assuming everything else happens the way it happens, correct. Of course. Yeah, I think the everything else was just too much to overcome. Anything other than a full elite quarterback would have been needed to.
I think maybe the Denver game is different. Maybe a game like that.
Saints game.
So maybe one of the, well, the Saints game, they still, it was a defense that had those two crazy bad touchdowns allowed. So that's why I say maybe one of the earlier games would have been a little bit different and that could have changed things, but I don't think there's a dramatic change either. So yes, you're right.
That Hail Mary might be the worst moment in football team history. If we're doing the bottom five.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that's without a doubt. Right.
Yeah. You know, it's fascinating that the injuries have plagued this franchise for so long. And you know, just when you're immersed in, you're like, oh, every other team must be going through this too. But it's really not that way. I mean, these guys have kind of led the league in injuries for the better part of the last decade, and certainly in very significant injuries, which is an interesting thing. And, you know, you don't hold the past against Ron because he's got new people, but then you note that his trainer was on DEA investigation this year. That didn't help the situation.
No matter how you try to compensate for it, you still lost your top guy and you lost your top two guys.
But let's run down the list of what you can feel comfortable with. I feel comfortable with the offensive line, even if Sheriff doesn't come back. Yeah. Like you'd love to have another really, you know, great player on the line.
And I think they'll address that in the offseason too.
Tight end. I feel great about tight end. Logan Thomas and John Bates. That's fine. That's a fine
and,
unit.
And I think Seals-Jones is a third guy with Sam is still coming on. I think you got some better depth there. Yeah, going in next.
Yeah, you got something there. Defensive line's fine. I think the secondary's fine, and it's maybe a bit of a hot take, but you know, I think just relative to what you can expect of the NFL, that, you know, Fuller is an NFL-level player. I think Jackson has settled into, you know, it may be a touch overpaid, but certainly NFL starter caliber over the course of the season. And so you say, like, can you address your weaknesses in this offseason? So your weaknesses are quarterback, obviously, big one. You need a second running back. You need somebody behind Gibson. And that's not a knock on Gibson. He can't play 17 games in the NFL at running back.
I agree with that.
And linebacker, you know, and obviously, you know, the Jamin Davis thing is its own probably hour-long discussion, you know, that you can go in depth on, but that it's not a roster with dozens of holes. It's a roster with a few very prominent
keyholes,
but I don't think it's unfixable in one offseason either. I think with the right moves, you can get to where you need to be. I didn't mention receiver just because I think if Curtis Samuel plays the full year, we view that differently.
And I think I'll be curious to see if De'Ami Brown takes a leap. I mean, he did. Oh man, sometimes you look too hard for signs of a guy, what he can do. And he had two catches in the last. Well, he only had two catches. So that one was a big catch and one was a nice grab over the middle. And what I, you know, there were some things I liked about that play, but I'm not going to overanalyze one play because it was one play. And the special team stuff, it's good for his competitiveness, but you still need to transfer that to offense. And so we'll see if he develops, because we know Antonio Gandy-Golden did not, and we wondered what he was going to be like into a year or two. I think De'Ami Brown has shown more, but not a ton more. So we don't know about that. So I agree with you. I think middle linebacker, I think they will solve that one this offseason. That's a mild take, but I think they'll solve that one.
That'll melt the snow right there, Dick.
Well, they'll melt it out here because I'm looking at my yard and it's mostly green right now. So we already started the melting process. But then the quarterback obviously will be the toughest one to fill. And that's where it's going to be determined exactly what kind of a step can you take. Are you having to settle for a guy again this offseason, or do you get a guy that you say you can build around for the next five, six, 7 years and do something with him? And so I think that'll determine if they go from, let's say, if they beat the Giants from a 7-win team to 10-11 win team, or can you go beyond that? Or are you just going to be kind of, you know, hoping, like this year, they hope that they could get to 9 or 10 wins with this quarterback group if things broke right. And it didn't. there are too many injuries, too much to overcome, and the margin for error was too small. So, you know, we'll see. Let's see. But I do think, but I agree with you, though, overall. I mean, I don't think there are – I don't think – like, the offensive line has good depth. You can get another guy out there, and I'm sure they will if you lose. Sure, if you have to, go get somebody. I think you want a little bit more depth inside. And I think D-line will be interesting because do you use – one of those guys is trade bait for a quarterback. But I still think you go out and I'd go out and get another guy too. I'm going to draft a guy or bring another guy in to maybe get with some size in the middle to maybe develop or have as a situational run stuffer type, something like that. But those are like, I think you can find those guys. I mean, the hardest one will be the quarterback. Yep. And so, you know, but you're right. I mean, a cornerback will be interesting. Does St. Juice come back? What does he do as he develops? Do they bring back McCain? I actually think he played well over the second half of the year. So I would have no problem with that.
I'd bring him back. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you bring Landon back?
The salary makes it very tough, but this is not a team that's going to be in any kind of cap purgatory next year. I think I'd almost let it be Landon's decision rather than team's decision. Let him know, here's how we're using you. Do you want to be here or do you want to go make $7 million less somewhere else where they can call you safety? Like,
we'll call you safety. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you only want him there if he wants to be there. But if he wants to be there, I think he does bring a lot to the table. And I think we saw glimpses of that as the year went on.
The question I would have then too, this is where you start to do the math with it. First of all, the savings, and I like what he did. I still saw out in that first Eagles game, despite him getting some of those getting some takeaways, he had some issues with his discipline on certain plays, but he also created some takeaways. One was a fortunate bounce, but he was in a position to make some plays. But the question I would have for them is, if you think you're going to get a middle linebacker, that means you like Cole Holcomb and you drafted Jamin Davis, are you going to be able to do different things with your base personnel, lessening the need for a guy like Landon as much as they had him this year? That's the one thing I wonder, in which case then you can't pay him what you're paying him, but I still think he adds value here.
Yeah, we're saying the same thing, which is I think both of us, if we were asked to make a yes or no prediction, would predict that no, Landon will not be here. But if we're allowed to pick on like 100% scale, I'd give it a 30% chance.
Yeah. Okay, I'm all right with that. All right, so I think another big one was on the OTAs and Chase Young. Basically, without saying Chase has to be here, he talked about how he wants guys to be here for OTAs and how that's where you install things. It's where, see what he say, it's when we're working together so we can develop this cohesion that you need to go forward. There's a lot of things that come about when you do get together during those 9 weeks that you have as far as OTAs and mini camps are concerned. I mean, I'm assuming when you heard that, you're thinking one guy, correct?
Well, Montez is technically two, but yes, that was a Chase Young message. Yeah. And they're both repped by the same agency, correct. And you know they kind of move in tandem. So I wouldn't think that one would zig and the other zag. The Chase Young thing is fascinating because of the timing of the injury. He is going to be rehabbing it right up until the start of the season. What we saw after Chase Young left was that Jonathan Allen is the true leader of the defense. You see, Chase Young is still going to move merchandise and he still needs to be the face of the organization in a lot of ways, at least until you have an elite quarterback in here. I don't think Terry really embraces that role in the same way that Chase does. You know, like you need to print Chase on the front of the tickets every week to get people excited about who they're going to come see. But if you were to ask those defensive players who's the true heart and soul of the defense and the leader, I think it's John Allen. And that's a interesting balancing act, not an impossible one, but it's an interesting situation if you're the coach to find a way to walk that line.
But you know, it's funny that you say that because I think one of the things that he talks about cohesion, I think of that D-line group. And I think that that group needs to be more together. And so chasm would be the wrong word, but I think there's still, you know, Chase with those young guys, I could see being more of a leader than John Allen was. And I don't think it's rare when you have just one leader for a group. And I think you need multiple guys at multiple positions who are leaders at that group. And, But I did wonder about the cohesion aspect of that quote as well.
You got four alphas on that front line there, four first round guys who are used to being the man everywhere they go. I'm not going to make too much of the punch, but you know, it showed you something for sure.
Yeah. And then going back to Sweat and Young, where he said, I think it's for those guys, it's just understanding their fit, the things we do and how they fit them. These guys are dynamic guys that run well and run through contact. That's a big thing for what you do on defense. You want guys that run through contact. That's who these guys are, I think. He also said, I think basically they have to understand who they are. And I thought that was interesting as well. But I think that goes back to what the early part of the season was about, was guys figuring out where they fit in and who they are on defense. And I think, again, Chase Young, and well, he brought him up. So that one was clearly about those guys. And Chase, I think, started when you'd watch him compared to last year. I mean, people forget how he finished last year as a rookie. He finished really strong. It was legit how well he played. And then he seemed like there were some things that he was working on differently or taking a different approach with his footwork and the stutter steps and all that. But I don't know. How did you process that one?
Yeah. And you know, Chase did a lot of work this offseason. And I always hate to pull Robert into this because we pull Robert into everything. But you just remember, Robert standing there, I think 2014, where I'm like, nobody watches more film than me. Like, he's like, yeah. I watch film for hours every night. And he wasn't lying. He just didn't know what he was watching. And he didn't turn it into results on the field. Like, he was working his butt off. Like, that was never in question. And Chase Young is working his butt off. That's not in question. You see the videos, you see what he's capable of doing. Like, he's working hard, but is he working smart in a way that will benefit the team? Or is he working on himself in a way that ultimately is going to create friction when he drops into the lineup?
Yeah. And I think that will be the one thing that I wonder about as he develops, because the guy still has a ton of talent. And listen, as he develops, he can still make plays, because again, we saw it. And I think when he would just rush and just like, and Rivera talked about that, big guys run well, running through contact. That's what they want him to be. That's your strength right now. As you develop your moves or a few moves, play to your strengths. And I think that's what it is. But speaking of the moves, like, that's what it's funny, because I talked to somebody who used to be a pass rush in the NFL. And like, I'd like to see the videos of him working on pass rush moves versus on the agility work, because we know that. And not to say that he's not, I think what catches people's eye are always the footwork and this and that, but that's what somebody would say. And I do think, like, I think the running through contact part is a big part of it, because that's both their games. They're not Ben the Corner, Von Miller type.
The upside is 100% still there. Nobody's writing this thing off. Right now they're forecasting the top two picks to both be pass rushers this year. Like, and I don't think that'll happen, because a quarterback always climbs up the boards, but like, it is still a marquee position in the NFL, and he still has the tools to be great at it. Like, yeah. are we critiquing him on a tough scale because he was a number two overall pick? Sure.
Yes.
You know, we're demanding that greatness. He's not achieving it right now. Is he capable of achieving it? Oh, heck yes.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't see a lack of a talent out there with him. I saw a lack of production, and I think some of that lack of production was due to, you know, some of the ways he rushed, but I think it's because, again, I go back to that stutter step, and Rivera talked about that earlier this year, but when you go back and watch it, there was one game, the Bills game, it was pronounced. When he stutter stepped, he would get stoned and he'd drop off. When he didn't, he would apply pressure. And that's there. It's not quite that simple, but to a degree it is. So I think it's not far-fetched to think you can come back and have a good year.
Yeah. And he has to pay for the sins of the past a lot too, because how many talented guys have we seen roll through here who are told they're bigger than the organization, and that ends up creating issues. And then all of a sudden he's not at OTAs. Like, you know, maybe in a vacuum, that's fine. But in light of everything that's happened here over the last 10 years, it's, oh crap. Like, are we running down this road again?
Right. And let's be clear here. There's only one person bigger than the organization, and it's me. So they just have to stop that nonsense. So that's why I'm waiting for him to be called the Washington Johnny Cakes, you know, something like that.
I've heard that new stadium in Berryville is going to be nice, but boy, I'm worried about the traffic on that two-lane dirt road.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, you hit it, if you kill it, you eat it, that on the way out here. So, you know, that's going to be the motto. And and the brisket will be fresh. So, yeah. So
freshest tailgate in the NFL.
Yeah, there you go. But I agree with you. I don't think it's far-fetched at all to think that Chase has a bounce back year. The one thing you know about that kid too, I think it does matter to him, and there's no way that he's going to come back happy with what he showed this year. And it's not just about the sacks. I think there's a lot, but you know, for them, it will be about the sacks. And I'll say this too, for people who didn't like him making commercials, those commercials dry up when is a defensive end if you don't get sacks. You know, quarterbacks, we see Baker Mayfield, you don't have to be great for very long to continue those commercials, apparently. But with the ends, you better be in a national spotlight, and you get that with sacks. All right,
The only thing redeeming Progressive is that those commercials are so good, I'm willing to overlook the fact that Baker Mayfield has been a dud for the last 11 weeks.
Yeah, I agree with that. I absolutely agree with that. Is the commercials, part of me is like, geez, you know, you'd wish he'd play better because the commercials are kind of good that they continue. But again, for defensive ends, the commercial opportunities dwindle if you're not producing. And I think people who know that are the people who rep Chase Young and Montez. Last one. Jamin Davis. He talked about the style of defense they played in college is different from the things that we asked him to do. So there's a lot of learning that was involved in that. And Rivera also brought up the fact that John Bostic was not out there helping him. And I think that's important. And I think it speaks to what he wants in the middle. And Cole Holcomb was not that guy. And it's not Cole's fault because he wasn't suited for that role, but he couldn't handle that role. I think it's the guy out there who's smart, who knows what they're doing. Now, you need a guy who's at a higher level than Bostic for them to succeed, but you need a guy that also knows what they're doing to help a guy like that. But I don't know. What do you see from Jamin? What did you see from Jamin this year? And what do you think for him going forward?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I'll start with Ron, because Ron had Cam Newton in Carolina, and I think part of this Washington experience has been him appreciating how important a quarterback is. Ron has always had a great middle linebacker.
Yes.
Like, he just, going back to when he was a linebacker, like, he's been around talent. He was talent. Like, going all the way back to the Bears, everywhere he's played, they've dominated at that position. And so when they drafted Jamin Davis, you say two things. One, it's a touch of a reach to take a linebacker that high in general. Mm-hmm. But two, if anybody is going to correctly identify who will be a star linebacker in the National Football League, it's this guy. Like, maybe Bill Belichick's number two because he's good at everything. But like, if you were to say pick one head coach and he needs to go pick a linebacker to be his guy for the next 10 years, I think Ron's the guy of all 32 guys. Like, he knows it, man. He knows that position. He knows talent. So, you know, that was what I said. Alossi was like, I don't know. I don't know middle linebackers, but I trust Ron. Like, I trust Ron to identify it. And now we're running down this road. And boy, what a flashing warning light last week when David Mayo is out snapping him, when the decks are clear for him to get out there and play, and he's not playing. I know there's a million things going on. There's COVID going on. There's the off the field stuff going on. So I don't want to jump to conclusions based on that, but this is a monster offseason for Jamin Davis. Cause now if he's going to move to that outside slot, he doesn't just have to be good. He's got to be crazy good to justify that first round pick.
Right. I think that's a good
point. You only have to be pretty good from the middle, as long as you're good at like calling the shots and commanding people and putting them in the right place. But if you're taking an outside linebacker in the first round, like, and not a 4-3, not a 3-4 outside linebacker like Kerrigan back in the day, like, but a 4-3 outside linebacker, like, you got to be crazy good to justify the first round. I don't see it at all. I continue to have a level of blind faith in Ron that this is a position he's good at, but boy, the early returns were just not promising at all.
Yeah. And there was a point during the year where I felt like he was developing, and he had a couple games where I'm like, okay, I see it. Like the Green Bay game, there was one play where it was bad, but overall I thought he did a pretty good job. The Raiders game where he misses those tackles, the one thing that I liked about his game is that he was in position to make a number of plays. He just didn't. Now, he made a couple of nice plays, but he missed four tackles that were key. And but the thing I liked is that, well, it starts with being in the right spot, and he was. And he was there to make plays. He didn't make them. That's what you have to do. But to your point, like, when he was drafted, you talked to people like, I think it was split, the people I talked to who felt he could be a middle linebacker for them. But he has speed, length, athleticism. Those, the traits he has there are somewhat unique. So if you can tap into that, then I think he can help them. But yeah, but you know, I think your point is valid. Is it's when you look at how he's developing, is that a guy that you would say then it was worthy of the 19th pick? Well, that remains to be seen. And I do think he can help them. To what level? You know, I think we'll find out. And I do think it'll help to have somebody else in the middle. It'll help them all. But then I wonder if you feel like Cole is playing a certain level and you have Jamin over here, how often are you using that base package versus the big nickel? And then if you're going to big nickel, then who's in the middle and who's out? And that's when we'll really start to see what they're looking at with it. So, but he's got to develop. And again, I felt like he made some strides in some areas, but he wasn't the guy that I would have picked there in all honesty. I mean, I picked Koromoa for our draft.
Well, I mean, then you're watching him last night and you're like, oh boy, he's something right now already, you know, like that's a little bit of salt in the wound.
Well, and I liked him because I felt like he played every bit to his speed. And I felt like he was aggressive when he'd come up and make tackles. So I felt like he would be a good playmaker for them. But, you know, they're still not paying me to run this franchise, Michael, no matter how right I always am.
Despite being the most important guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's shocking. And I know that, you know, I don't know. One day they'll listen to these podcasts before the draft and say, you know what, this is what he's saying. We got to roll this way. Or they'll watch our ESPN mock draft and like, wait a minute. Throw that out because Keim said this. So, you know, but, you know, I think I've made a couple good picks. I'd have a hell of a team, I think. So at least that's what I'm telling myself. So there you go. I don't know if it's actually accurate, but you know, it sounds good. So
it's easy to coach from the press box. There you go. Know that.
Yep, it is. So Michael, anyway, thanks a lot for coming on. Go back and enjoy the snow and have a good day. And we'll see you soon.
Looking forward to it. See you.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
That's it for this episode. Thanks to Michael for joining me, and thank you, as always, for listening. I'll be back with another episode Thursday night. Talk to you next time.